The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Are you interested in the cutting edge of investing? That means frontier and emerging markets. And would you like to get started? Or perhaps you are already investing but still have questions? Welcome to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. On today's program, we'll take a look at news, trends, and background information that you should know to become an informed investor in new and emerging opportunities. Now, here is your host, Gavin Graham.
Hello, I'm Gavin Graham, and I'm here with Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing each Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, and 2 p.m. in the UK. Each week with my global roster of fund managers, analysts, and journalists, either on the ground or in major financial centres, we examine emerging and frontier markets investing, try to clear up some of the confusion and misconceptions about these markets, and suggest courses of action for you, the investor, that will help you actually enjoy the opportunities provided by these rapidly growing markets. We are going to be looking at the emerging markets, of course. That's including the BRIC countries, the acronym that includes Brazil, Russia, India, and China, but also such major emerging markets as Turkey, Chile, Mexico, and the Czech Republic. And today I'm going to be looking at the aftermath of the emerging market sell-off, which saw the emerging markets down between 8 and 9% in January. As the smoke clears, we're going to be discussing with a very experienced fund manager in these markets what the outlook might be going forward. By frontier markets, we mean, in general, less developed emerging markets such as Colombia, Vietnam, Nigeria, Kenya, Bangladesh, Kazakhstan, Panama, Slovakia, and Botswana. And today we'll have reports on Nigeria, on Venezuela and Latin America, and a couple of Middle Eastern markets. Today, to start with, I have John Derrick on the line from US Global Investors in San Antonio, Texas, who's been one of our regulars. And we're going to be discussing the big sell-off in emerging markets that we've seen over the last few weeks. Welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Market Investing, John.
Thanks, Gavin.
So, as I mentioned in the introduction, that was, I think, if not the worst, then certainly one of the worst months we've seen as far as emerging market performance is concerned, at least as far as the MSCI Emerging Markets Index is concerned, with a fall of getting on for 10% at its worst in January. Would it be fair to say that the worst of the sell-off is now over, given the severity of that fall? And are there some opportunities emerging as a result of the sell-off?
You're absolutely right. It definitely was a very rough month in January, and it's been a rough go since really October. The market's kind of been in a downtrend since that time. I think there's a lot of things that have happened, and so when you're in a kind of a bear market or kind of a grinding lower market, it's very tough as an investor to kind of stick with that. But usually those are kind of where the opportunities come up as well. And so kind of circling back to your point is, I think the worst is probably over. It actually reminds me a lot of the beginning of last year in that there were a lot of worries about China and China growth, and there was a lot of concerns about Europe and what was going to happen there, and what was all that going to mean, and then we had tapering, and then all that kind of stuff, and so we started off another year with a lot of worries, but I think there's an opportunity here, particularly for long-term, asset allocator type investors. If they want to put money to work in emerging markets, I think the time to rebalance and do those kind of things is when the markets are down and weak, and when things like the U.S. market are strong, and you rebalance in those periods of time. And I think over the long run, those kind of things work out. So generally speaking, I think it's probably the worst is probably over for emerging markets, and that for long-term investors, it's probably a good time to, revisit your asset allocation and make sure you're positioned appropriately.
Would it be fair to say that the negative sentiment was somewhat overdone because it was a pretty indiscriminate sell-off? There were some countries which had obvious concerns like current account deficits, which had been funded by fairly short-term foreign inflows, and they got hit pretty hard. But some other countries which didn't seem to have a lot of the same underlying fundamental problems were still taken behind the woodshed and beaten up pretty badly. So is it fair to say that the negative sentiment was somewhat overdone?
I would say that's true. Yeah, I think you're right. You know, countries current, you know, kind of a poor current account situation were hit the hardest generally, but there was definitely some indiscriminate selling, and that particularly was true, you know, over the summer, a little bit here more recently. But, you know, what's interesting, though, is that countries that have actually showed some improvement in some of those metrics or, you know, some more positive, I know we've talked about it in the past, positive government policies, have actually rebounded pretty nicely. It's kind of interesting that places like Indonesia and the Philippines and places like that that have been, that were really beaten up last year, like you said, taken to the woodshed last year, have been some of the strongest rebounders over the last few months and have been particularly strong here recently. And a lot of it has to do with either an improving current account situation or good government policies are kicking in or the market is reacting to good policies. You know, we talked about it before. Greece is another area that, this is going back several months now, but Greece is another area within emerging markets that may be new to some emerging market investors, but that's another attractive area as, you know, they've just suffered 6 years of recession. Just now coming out of that, I saw a headline this morning, you know, predicting, you know, it's a little bit old news now, predicting, you know, Greece is going to grow, I think, 0.6% in 2014, and this is from the EU Commission. But I think people know that by now, and that's actually been a very strong performer. Actually, I think today it's at a new 52-week high, I believe, Greece, the Greek market, and so that's interesting. I think another one that's interesting is Egypt, and yes. While I'm not an Egypt expert, Egypt's been one of the best performers, and the interesting thing there is it's almost when the military took over the government is kind of when things stabilized and that allowed it to rally, and now that the government is stepping down, or the military government is basically stepping down, allowing elections to go forward, you know, that's been one of those areas that that provided some stabilization that maybe was a little bit hard to see at the time, but Egypt has been one of the best performers. So anyway, I think those are kind of interesting areas in the market. And as you're seeing improvement in, actually, you know, Egypt is another one of those countries that actually had an improving current account situation, and I think that was probably part of that driver. And so kind of thematically, you know, Egypt, Indonesia, the Philippines are all kind of in that same kind of boat as far as improving current account situation, and sure enough, those markets are some of the best performers.
Now, I recall when you met, you suggested Greece as a possible rebound story a few months back. I said that certainly most investors would have been raising their eyebrows, but it has worked out very well. And as you pointed out, Egypt racked by political turmoil, but it's also, I think it's up 70% since the military takeover in August. Are there any countries which you would still feel a bit cautious about, even though, as you say, the smoke maybe has been clearing a little bit and we've had some decent rebounds over the last few weeks from the height of the sell-off? Are there still countries which maybe investors should be a little bit cautious about?
Sure. You know, while I still like the long-term kind of secular growth story for Turkey, that market is still being kind of racked by political issues, and so you have elections coming up in March, some regional elections, and then a bigger, I think, a presidential election in the summer, in June. And there just seems to be a lot of noise around that, you know, some things came out yesterday, essentially, you know, some recording, supposed purported recording of Prime Minister Erdogan, and, you know, it's like a slush fund and wiretapping political opponents and all this stuff, and the market was down on that. And so I think there could be some political noise there. They still have some shorter-term kind of structural issues to work through. I think in the next, you know, once you get past maybe the summer, in the next 6 months or so, I think it you might be worth a look again. But I think in the very short term, I think it's going to be choppy or maybe sloppy, and you could get hit on any given day just from some political flare-up that takes place. Places like, I think a lot of the, commodity-dependent areas, I think it's a little bit tough right now. The Chinese data hasn't been particularly good. Like I said, it kind of reminds me of last year, but, Brazil is still in a tough situation. It's hard to see, the catalyst there, at least in the very near term, of what's going to drive that. They really just need commodity prices to improve, and then they need some better government policies, I think, to encourage investment and foreigners to come back into the country and those kind of things. But anyway, so those would be the a couple maybe I'd highlight.
Indeed. And just to finish up here, an area that you're pretty familiar with, the events in Ukraine obviously have indicated that the importance of political governance, and it was a point we were discussing at the top of this item in terms of countries with good or improving governance are perceived as doing well and investors are happy. Obviously, it is an issue for investors. Would you say that as a general rule, you would want to be careful about countries where there are issues of political governance, and Ukraine being a perfect example of that?
I'm sorry, situations where what kind of government?
Where there are concerns about political governance, where there might be issues with, for example, corruption, or where there's anti-investment or things in place that make it difficult for investors to feel comfortable.
Sure. Yeah. No. I think Ukraine is a particularly extreme example of that. But you're right, and I think that's generally a good rule of thumb, is that you can likely avoid those places or minimize exposure to those. Actually, the developments in Ukraine, while terrible, I know there was a lot of deaths and those kind of things, but you've gotten this political change, and we're still early days, and nothing happens overnight and all that, but it's actually been remarkably peaceful since that kind of power transfer has taken place, especially relative to what was going on before. And I think there's some positive things to come out of that, and it's almost like the Orange Revolution from a few years ago. It's kind of orange-esque again, in that the people have risen up and said, I've had enough. And so definitely we're hopeful that that things improve there, and that they get a strong democratic government there that moves in the right direction.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much indeed, John. That's been an excellent survey of what's been happening and some of the potential opportunities that might be there. I'm sure we'll be back talking about this again in the not-too-distant future.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, John. That was John Derrick at US Global Investors in San Antonio, Texas. And we were looking at the general sell-off in emerging market. Why did it happen? What triggered it? You heard some of the reasons in our discussion. In our current edition of the new publication, we have produced, Al Emid, my producer, and myself, the EFMI newsletter. We attempt to answer some of these questions and give you some ideas about what might happen next. If you were interested in subscribing, please write to info@emergingfrontier.ca or call 888-287-8229. You can buy it immediately by going to www.emergingfrontier.ca/newsletter at the discounted price of $94.99. When I come back to the break, I'm going to be talking to an expert on South America about a country that we would not recommend in the short term for investors. No, I'm not talking about Argentina. Please stay with me for that.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
This program is produced by EFMI Media, which has become the leader in information about emerging and frontier markets investing. EFMI recently compiled the book entitled Investing in Frontier Markets: Opportunity, Risk, and Role in an Investment Portfolio, set for release by John Wiley & Sons later this year, and another book, also on frontier markets, which will be on store bookshelves later in the year. We are also launching a newsletter called EFMI. For more information, email info@emergingfrontier.ca. For more news about upcoming program segments, the books we have written, or the EFMI newsletter, please email info@emergingfrontier.ca. You can call 416-944-1750.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned into Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. To connect with our program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's toll-free in North America, 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to info@emergingfrontier.ca. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing. I'm Gavin Graham. When conversation turns to problems in South America, most individuals immediately think of Argentina, unsurprisingly given its long-term track record of losing money for investors. We discussed Argentina with Rich Gula of the Argyle Companies a few weeks ago. However, Argentina doesn't have a monopoly on problems in South America. Venezuela has become notably less stable politically and financially, even during the period of rule by the charismatic president Hugo Chavez, who passed away just a few days short of a year ago. For an update, I have Daniela Blancas, an economist with Scotiabank and who's appeared on the program several times, on the line from Toronto. Welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing, Daniela.
Thank you very much for having me again.
Not at all. Now, there are a number of the problems which are now emerging in riots on the streets in Venezuela were brewing under Chavez's rule, but it seems as though his charismatic presence had helped to, in some way, keep the lid on things to a certain extent. Have things gotten notably worse since his death?
Well, I would say that the problems in Venezuela are not new. The economic imbalances have been there for quite a while now. The thing is, with after Chavez died, there were more on the political uncertainty. Hugo Chavez was a very interesting leader and very charismatic, and people really loved Hugo Chavez. So after he died, it was a process of like a transition for Venezuela. And I think that, well, recently we have heard more of the social demonstrations, and they have been dominating all the headlines, both in the international media and politically in Venezuela. So I think that the problems are still there, but we've heard more recently about this.
So those problems are proving somewhat expensive, at least as far as the cost of borrowing for the government is concerned. The three main rating agencies do not have a positive view on the country. I believe S&P has lowered its sovereign credit rating and still has a negative outlook, and Fitch and Moody's also have a negative outlook. How much of a problem is this for Venezuela? Because obviously it's a major oil exporter. One would imagine it wouldn't need to make too much use of the international credit markets, but obviously having your ratings downgraded is not good news.
Well, yeah, we've heard, especially at the end of last year, some of the rating agencies downgrading Venezuela, basically as a responding to fiscal dependence on oil revenues. It's really high, weak institutional framework, higher inflation, low growth. So it's like a lot of things affecting Venezuela's sovereign credit ratings. And however, if you go, you see like the bonds, we don't have so far such a risk on the bonds in Venezuela because they are a back of oil production. So I think it's a not so weak story on that side, just because they have oil production, and even though it has been decreasing somewhat in recent years, still remains relatively strong for the country. So there, as you were mentioning, the credit default swaps as well remain the second highest in the region. obviously following Argentina, and they are high if you compare it with other countries. But I think that so far, investors already differentiate between the very optimistic stories in Latin America, let's say Peru, Mexico, and Colombia, and the not-so-positive stories in Latin America, which is Venezuela and Argentina. So I think that there is already a differentiation in place when we talk about Latin America. Maybe 10 years ago, when you talk about Latin America, it was all one region. It was everything moving at the same pace, at the same time, and having very strong spillover effects one country to the other. I think that right now, this is not the case, because we have the stories in Venezuela, the stories in Argentina, and they are not so positive when we compare it with other countries. And I think that investors are already on that page.
So what's the outlook for Venezuela going forward in terms of GDP growth? Pretty weak last year, I presume, partially because of the political uncertainty, but also obviously commodity prices weren't especially strong, and the heavy oil that Venezuela produces. Is there any sign of improvement there?
So what we are expecting now is that growth will remain very low in Venezuela in the next 2 years. As you were mentioning, last year, Venezuela grew 1.6% based on official data. This was well below the 5.6% that we saw in 2012. So I think one key thing is government spending. Government plays a key role in Venezuela economic outlook. So in 2012, we had elections, so the government spending increased due to the elections. But at the same time, we had last year that the government spending was basically the main driver for economic growth.
Yep.
But it was well below what we saw in previous years. So I think going forward, the outlook is not very positive. We have very high inflation. We have low household consumption, low job creation. Export growth will remain fairly well, not so well, but still there, especially the oil production. Imports are increasing, so I don't see there is a clear signs that Venezuela will start accelerating its growth pace in the next 2 years. So yeah, our expectation is not so positive for the coming 2 years for Venezuela.
Well, you mentioned inflation. What were the actual numbers as far as inflation last year? Because they were pretty high, weren't they? And obviously, when you got that combination of pretty low growth and pretty high inflation, that's not a very appealing mixture.
Yeah, no. Inflation closed last year around 56% year over year.
I'm sorry, Daniela. Could you just repeat that? 56% inflation, is that right?
Yes, that's what we can find in the official data numbers. 56%
wow.
Year over year in December.
And for this year?
So it's very high inflation for sure. But what we like, data for inflation is not available every month. So sometimes we have problems finding these numbers. There has been a lot of scarcity of goods, and this has prompted to like secondary markets. And so inflation could be even higher of this number, like that this number that official numbers showed based on the informal market that has developed. Yeah, inflation is a huge problem in Venezuela. I don't see so far signs that inflation would decelerate significantly, and we are still expecting that 40% or close to 40% in the coming year, at least in 2014. And then we'll see if we have some signs that the prices could decelerate significantly. So far, we don't have that sign yet.
So presumably the Venezuelan currency has also been suffering as a result of this pretty high inflation, along with the political uncertainty. Do we have any? How much has it slid against the US dollar in the last year?
Okay, so currency controls in Venezuela are still there, and we expect that they will remain in place. We heard at the beginning of the year that they were doing some modifications to the currency regime. Also, there is an informal market in Venezuela, which also it's way higher than the official rate. So we've heard these new measures. I don't think that so far we have enough information to say that this has eased some pressures on the currency or not. So it's still to be seen because this was a fairly recent thing, announcement in Venezuela. So, but still, economic imbalances are so pronounced that I think that the adjustment that has to be done in terms of currency, it has to be more than we've seen. But it has to be, at the same time, it has to be fairly gradual, I would say. It's very hard from these huge economic imbalances to do an adjustment, one adjustment, and the problems will be solved. I don't think that's how things could be done. But at the same time, the pressures on the currency are high. So these recent measures could ease somewhat, but we don't have enough information to say so far this year if the pressures have been eased somewhat or not. So I think it's a good step towards a more liberalized currency regime in Argentina, but still proven to be seen in this year at least.
Right. So then to summarize, Daniela, effectively for foreign investors, given all the very low growth, high inflation, the foreign exchange controls, in essence, the recommendation would have to be to steer clear of Venezuela for the foreseeable future, at least given all of these uncertainties. Would you say that's a fair summary of what we've been discussing about what's happening in Venezuela?
Well, Venezuela's business environment for sure is challenging. It's alarming, but we have the recent news that we've heard about Venezuela. There remain like a lot of uncertainty regarding this. If we look to, based on international rankings, Venezuela ranks at the bottom of the World Bank's ease of doing business. It's the number around 181 out of 189. So it's pretty low. Additionally, also other rankings such as Transparency International Corruption Perception Index, Venezuela also ranks very poorly. And other international rankings suggest that the environment or the not-so-friendly policies for investors remain there. And so far as well, I don't see that these could change in the really short term for Venezuela. So it's a very challenging environment for business and investment for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thanks very much indeed, Daniela. I appreciate your insight there. I think, you know, there are some, as you say, some attractive markets in South America, Latin America. We mentioned Peru, Colombia, Mexico, and there are some ones which are distinctly less attractive. Venezuela certainly appears to fall in that latter camp. So thanks very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks to Daniela Blancas at Scotiabank in Toronto for that look at Venezuela. And that's one of the reasons why a good active manager looking at emerging and frontier markets is a great help, because there are some countries which, for whatever reasons, are not particularly attractive destinations. And I think it would be fair to say, on the basis of that discussion, Venezuela ranks up there. Now, while it's minus 14 in Toronto and minus 23 in Edmonton at the moment, summer is coming eventually. When it does, you may be enjoying a cold beer, and in this edition of the EFMI newsletter that's out this month in February, we talk about one of the major brewers operating in emerging and frontier markets. Please write to info@emergingfrontier.ca or call 888-287-8229. When I come back from the break, I'll have two reports on the Middle East, one focusing on Saudi Arabia, on changes in the labor market, and one on debt rollover in Dubai. Please stay with me for that.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
This program comes to you from the EFMI Media Company. EFMI Media is one of the most comprehensive sources of information and analysis on emerging and frontier markets. EFMI Media has become a leader in knowledge, expertise, and analysis of emerging and frontier markets, both in opportunities to investigate and pitfalls to avoid. For further information about EFMI Media, go to www.emergingfrontier.ca or call 416-944-1750. EFMI Media produces this program, researched and wrote Investing in Frontier Markets, Opportunity, Risk,
risk and role in an investment portfolio, which is set for release later this year, and is currently working on a second book, also on Frontier Markets. EFMI also publishes a newsletter called EFMI Information and provides knowledgeable speakers on these and other topics. For further information about EFMI Media, go to www.emergingfrontier.ca, write to info@emergingfrontier.ca, or call 416-944-1750. Listen for exclusive clips from Oprah's upcoming Super Soul Sunday series on Authentic Living with Andrea Matthews every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America 7th Wave channel. Then be sure to watch Oprah's Super Soul Sunday on OWN Network TV at 11 a.m., 10 Central every Sunday.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned into Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. To connect with our program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's toll-free in North America, 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to info@emergingfrontier.ca. Now, back to the program.
Hi, this is Gavin Graham, and welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing. As I mentioned before we went into the break, we have a couple of reports on what's been happening in the Middle East. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking about the effect of changes in the Saudi labor market. But first, let's look at one of the major frontier markets, Dubai, which had its own real estate crisis at the same time as the developed world was experiencing its own. That was back in 2009, and now Dubai is recovering strongly from the crisis in its real estate market, but it still has a legacy from the crisis, which is about $10 billion in debt. It borrowed the money 5 years ago, and the debt is due to mature next month. At the time, the loan helped Dubai and many of its companies avoid default. To clarify the implications, I have Montasa Khalefi on the line from Dubai. He's Senior Manager, Global Markets at Quantum Investment back there, and a regular on the show. Welcome back to the program, Montasa.
Hi, Gavin. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. So why did Dubai, just to recap for our listeners, why did Dubai need the loan? Was it part of the general financial crisis, or were there some specific issues with Dubai itself?
Yeah, it was mainly the debt crisis for Dubai in back in 2008-2009. It was triggered by a real estate crisis, and it has impacted several of the government-linked entities which were engaged in the real estate markets and were severely hit by the default of Dubai World, which was one of the biggest government-related entities. So following this crisis, Abu Dhabi, which is the emirate, the capital emirate of United Arab Emirates, assisted Dubai with a $20 billion total package. And this assistance was very welcome, yani, in 2009, and have contributed to calm the crisis. And it consisted on $10 billion bond, which arrived to maturity on February the 22nd, and this is the one that has been rolled over. And also two more bonds, one $5 billion, which have been fully subscribed by National Bank of Abu Dhabi, and another one of $5 billion also subscribed by Al Hilal Bank, which is also another Abu Dhabi-owned bank. These two bonds of $5 billion will arrive at maturity in next November.
So obviously the fact that the initial $10 billion bond from the UAE Central Bank has been rolled over has helped the stability of the region and Dubai's outlook. So is the recovery in Dubai continuing to go along fairly smoothly now?
Yeah, it's going pretty smoothly and very fast. And this refinancing is another step toward towards for recovery. It shows that there is strong ties between two Emirates, Dubai and Abu Dhabi. And here the liquidity situation in Dubai is remaining very comfortable thanks to this refinancing, and it will permit to Dubai to come again to the market and to be able to refinance and to at good rates, and also to continue to invest in the infrastructure and also to market itself as the regional hub for the finance and trade and tourism.
So how did the stock markets take the news of the refinancing? Presumably they felt it was pretty good news.
Yeah, markets, I should say that the impact of the rollover has been priced in since maybe the beginning of the year, since the news was not a big scoop, but it was mainly expected by the market. So markets have been performing very well since the beginning of the year, now doing plus 25% year to date, despite that last year's performance was very strong, as the Dubai Financial Market Index gained 100%.
Just to finish up then, Montessa.
Performing very strong.
Excellent. Well, you know, as you say, it has been one of the strongest performing markets already. Mm. Now that the first refinancing has been resolved and the second one in November looks to be pretty much a done deal, presumably that should give investors confidence that the outlook for Dubai remains fairly positive.
Yeah, it remains steady. We remain bullish in Dubai, and mainly, as usual, on the especially here in the to all the stocks that are linked to the construction, real estate, or tourism sector. For example, Amar, which is the main real estate developer. Another stock is Arabtech, which is the biggest construction company here. And also investors, fixed income investors, could play it through Dubai government bonds or many bonds for example, of Emirates Airlines. Many opportunities here.
Excellent. Thanks very much indeed, Montessa. I always appreciate your insight on what's happening in the Gulf financial markets.
Thank you, Gavin. Bye.
Thanks. Our thanks to Montessa Khalefi at the Quantum Investment Bank for that look at another legacy of the global financial crisis, which seems to have been resolved fairly successfully, at least as far as Dubai is concerned. Now, let's have a look at the labour markets. There are obviously a large number of expatriate workers in the Gulf region and Saudi Arabia. Some reports suggest that in Dubai, foreigners outnumber native Emiratis by 11-1. Saudi Arabia, the estimates of foreign workers are somewhere around the 9 million mark effective of last April. However, during a 10-month period last year, roughly 1 million of these workers left this country, and the stock markets there have felt the impact. To get the details about these departures, I have Thomson Reuters financial journalist Nadia Salim on the line. She's just completed a detailed report on what's happening. Welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing, Nadia.
Good morning, Gavin. Thanks. It's good to be back.
Thanks. Now, having 1 million workers leaving any country in a 10-month period seems pretty serious. What exactly happened?
Basically, there was a mass exodus, you can say, in Saudi as the government rounded up a lot of illegal workers. The main point was to help the local unemployment rate for Saudis and essentially improve the economy as well. So a lot of them were told to leave around November last year. And that's when a lot of projects were hit. And I've heard of many delays in the construction sector.
So, presumably, one of the reasons for the departure of the foreign workers, as you suggest, is to help the employment situation for the locals. But are there enough locals to actually fill some of the gaps left? Or, as you suggested in towards the end of that previous answer, are there some serious labor shortages now emerging?
there remains to be a massive shortage still in the market. And the main concern is that the type of jobs that are now available because of the exit of a lot of foreign workers is are the kind of jobs that are not likely to be filled up by Saudis, which is mainly lower end of the spectrum in the construction sector, labor sector.
Obviously, and it's a phenomenon observed around the world in that the jobs where there are shortages are often difficult, dangerous, dirty jobs, which locals understandably don't necessarily want to do. Is this actually now starting to have some effect on company profits, and what have we been seeing in the stock market?
In the first quarter, we saw some of the banks post some weaker profits because of provisionings. Speculation is that these are potentially for bad loans given to the construction sector. Also, we've seen one of the construction companies, Khodari & Sons, say their profit was hit as well because of slowdown in the sector due to the labor shortage, as well as telecom operators in Saudi who's already been facing losses, and they had larger losses because of lesser revenues as the huge population exit the country.
Now, that would obviously affect things like top-line revenue as well as profitability. Nonetheless, the Saudi stock market is still near five-year highs, I believe, but it's been a laggard amongst the other Gulf markets. We were hearing Dubai was up sort of 25% this year. Yeah. How's Saudi been doing so far?
Yes, it had a very slow start to the year, but it has sort of caught up now. I think it's up above 10% now. And the funny thing is that there's been a shift back into the real estate sector. I'm guessing people think the problem will resolve itself in the coming few months or so. Plus, there's a lot of demand for real estate in Saudi Arabia.
I mean, one of the reasons for that, obviously, is the Saudi economy is actually still growing pretty solidly. What sort of forecasts do analysts have for GDP growth this year, and how did it do last year?
We have an HSBC estimate of 4% for this year, and last year was around 3.8%. This is still estimated as well, because the final figure is not out yet.
And obviously, a large part of that is the oil sector. That is presumably continuing to do fairly well, that even though growth was weaker than a lot of people anticipated last year, the oil price held up. Presumably, Saudi Aramco, the state-owned oil company, is continuing to do fairly well, even with the effect in other parts of the economy, such as construction.
That's right. The oil sector of the economy is stable, and the petrochemical sector as well has been relatively steady so far this year. Higher petrochemical prices have helped with that.
Is where we are on this then. You mentioned construction, particularly telecommunications and the banks as being the sectors that had been hit somewhat by this 1 million exodus of foreign workers. However, the oil sector is holding up okay, and you said that in fact there'd been some strength in the market because real estate was actually perking up somewhat. So would you say that the effect of this labour exodus is now effectively reflected in the relatively lackluster performance of Saudi towards the end of the year, and that going forward, in essence, it's already reflected in prices?
Yes, I believe you're right, Gavin. Retail investors that dominate the market have already put the issue on the back shelf. We've yet to see how the results are in the second quarter, and if there remains to be impact on them from the labor shortage, then perhaps the market could again take a hit. But it's recovered, and it's moving up fast again.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much indeed for that survey of a major, major change in the Saudi labour market. But it's interesting to see that the market seems to be fairly resilient as far as the effects are concerned. Do appreciate it, and I'm sure we'll be speaking again soon.
Thanks again, Gavin.
Take care. Thanks to Thomson Reuters financial journalist Nadia Sleem for that report on major change in the Saudi labour market. And it's a reminder of some specific factors, especially in markets which have a large dependence upon foreign labour, such as the Gulf markets, that changes in government regulation can make a big difference in the short term. So thinking about the effects of the financial crisis, as we were discussing earlier, with Dubai. Did you know that Vietnam, which is one of the most promising frontier markets, also had a major real estate crisis caused by indiscriminate lending by the banking sector? Same tune gets played in a number of countries. But now, after some clear up of the bad loans on the bank's balance sheets and a crackdown by government on connected lending, the Vietnamese stock market looks quite promising. If you read our new publication, the FMI newsletter, you can find out what's been happening, how to play it, and what the future we believe might hold for it. Please write to info@emergingfrontier.ca or call 888-287-8229. You can subscribe immediately at a discounted price of $94.99 by going to www.emergingfrontier.ca/newsletter/buy. When I come back from the break, I'll be having a look at one of the largest frontier markets in Africa and a report on what's happened at the central bank and why we and you should consider it important. Stay with us for that.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Do you like what you hear about investing in emerging and frontier markets on this program? Would you like to learn more to increase your investing effectiveness? EFMI Media also publishes a subscription-based newsletter called EFMI. We'd like to tell you more about it. Drop us an email at info@emergingfrontier.ca. We've designed EFMI as a newsletter to provide expert and up-to-date news and analysis of opportunities in the same markets that we discuss here on Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. EFMI as information and analysis that you won't find anywhere else, and you can start receiving it by emailing info@emergingfrontier.ca.
Listen for exclusive clips from Oprah's upcoming Super Soul Sunday series on Authentic Living with Andrea Matthews every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America 7th Wave channel. Then be sure to watch Oprah's Super Soul Sunday on OWN Network TV at 11 a.m., 10 Central every Sunday.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/worldtalkradio.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned into Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. To connect with our program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's toll-free in North America, 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to info@emergingfrontier.ca. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the final segment of Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing. I'm Gavin Graham. Nigeria has the largest economy in sub-Saharan Africa outside of South Africa and is the largest frontier market in Africa. Its banking sector has been one of the success stories over the last few years as it's been cleaned up and turned around. And therefore, it's unsurprising that it recently reverberated with the news of the ouster of Malam Sanusi, the governor of the Central Bank of Nigeria. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan issued a direct executive order that led to Sanusi's suspension. To get the details and to check whether it will have any impact on Nigerian and African equities in general, I have a regular contributor, Baldwin Burgess, Managing Director at Silk Invest Funds, on the line from London. Welcome back, Baldwin.
Thank you, Gavin. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. It's fair to say Sanusi had a good reputation amongst African and international bankers.
He really did. I mean, he was deeply respected, especially he made a lot of decisive actions and difficult decisions that helped Nigeria fix its financial sector after it was really hit hard by what I think was recently going on in Vietnam in a very bad lending situation. And he took some really, let's say, very, strong-minded decisions that actually worked. So, you know, I think a lot of the international investors really admired him for what for the job he did. And then that's why, you know, when last week the president of Nigeria suspended him as the governor of the central bank, international investors were obviously very confused and surprised about this, right? Because it just doesn't make any sense. But I mean, if you've been following Nigerian finance, this has been going on for some time. So back in December, the president already asked Sanusi to step down.
And so, sorry, Baldwin, I was going to say, because a direct order from a country's president to oust the head of a central bank is pretty unusual. Effectively, is it the fact that the difficult decisions he took ruffled a few feathers in the Nigerian political establishment?
He certainly, I mean, of course, because he really made such difficult decisions. I mean, he ousted the management of banks and so on. He basically took the banks under care and then repaired them. So yes, he did ruffle a bunch of feathers. And this is the territory of politics, and I never really try to understand it. What I do know is that it causes jitters in the market. So that this is essentially what we're looking at. But the bottom line here, Gavin, is that we think this whole story is totally overblown. You know, Sanusi was set to step down on the 1st of June anyway.
Okay.
And so, you know, essentially what we have is that Nigerian investors are really on the buying side of the selling orders that you see from abroad, you know, on the days after this happened. And so I think what we have is a typical disconnect between the international perspective and domestic perspective on things. This is going to be an election year in 2014. And so you're going to have a lot of noise, a lot of things like that going on. And I think it's going to be, I think as an investor, it's kind of interesting because the good Nigerian companies traded high multiples by definition because they're playing with such a big opportunity. And by now, everybody sort of knows that, right?
Yeah.
So anytime you get an opportunity to buy in a little bit cheaper, it's really the kind of environment that you want to step into, even though it's volatile.
I mean, is it fair to say that Nigerian politics is always, to use a phrase, interesting, but that Nigeria's markets haven't really demonstrated much correlation with what's been happening politically? So apart from the fact that we do have an election, and we've also had a peaceful transfer of power in Nigeria the last time we had an election, is there going to be much of an effect? Or, as you say, really should investors be looking at this and saying this concern about Sanusi's early departure is a buying opportunity?
I think you're right. There is that's a very good point. You know, looking back at, if you look at it from a pure data set point of view, you're right. Politics does cause the market to move. So, you know, that's the only reason why it's interesting. You know, what politics in itself is politics, you know, whatever. I don't try to understand it or not, but the fact that it's there is interesting. But I think, yeah, this is going to be, and therefore this is going to be an interesting year. Now, there's another thing why we think this is overblown is because, so Sanusi gets ousted, but a minute later you have Sharal, the deputy governor, Sara Alade. She just takes over, and she's been in the institution since 1993. So really, there is absolutely no problem when it concerns running the central bank, right? That's what's overblown. Now, obviously, what does happen is, now that Nigeria is in the emerging markets category, is we have to keep an eye on what's going on in the currency, what's going on in the bond market. You know, there's obviously a lot of pressure on the currency. The currency is actively managed because Nigeria has a lot of reserves to do this. They have one of the highest forex reserves in the world, and they have been pouring some of that in defense. They also operate within a band. It's the 155 level plus 3 or minus 3 level against the dollar, so they're working actively on this. What we know, having listened to a recent conference call, is that they're not planning on devaluing the Naira. Because, again, it's just goes to say that this whole story has sort of been blown a bit out of proportion, because the Central Bank of Nigeria is a 50-year-old institution which has a team there, and I think what we can expect is just continuity.
Yeah. In fact, you might make a comparison with Bernanke and Yellen, although perhaps a little bit more abruptly than had been thought. But as you say, the fact that the deputy governor has been there since 1993 and this continuity should give confidence to international investors. So you still feel at Silk Invest that Nigeria looks to be an interesting market and that this is a buying opportunity?
Oh, absolutely. This is still the key market in Africa, in terms of scalability of a market as well. So the companies are still the companies. The companies operate by definition a difficult territory in a place where you don't always have energy and have to. My colleague Funmi, unfortunately, couldn't be on the call today because I really wanted her to do it. But she always says the following: she says, "Like if my country grew 5% with patch electricity, just imagine when we fix things." You know, she's totally right about this because it's a land of a lot of entrepreneurs. And the companies that have thrived there are pretty strong and interesting companies.
Absolutely. Thanks very much indeed, Baldwin. Appreciate your insights on that change at the Nigerian Central Bank.
It is always a pleasure, Gavin.
Thanks. Thanks to Baldwin Burgess at Silk Invest Funds for that analysis of the upheaval at the Nigerian Central Bank, which Silk Invest feel is actually a buying opportunity because there's continuity and the governor was departing on the 1st of June anyway. Next week, I will be back with our usual global roster of contributors for another series of reports. We covered Venezuela, Dubai, Saudi Arabia, Nigeria, and the general emerging markets sell-off today. My name is Gavin Graham. Our producer is Al Emid. We're the co-authors of Investing in Frontier Markets, now available in English-speaking markets around the world, and the upcoming Frontier Markets for Dummies, as well as the publishers of the FMI newsletter that I mentioned during the program. Please go to info@emergingfrontier.ca or call the customer service department at 888-287-8229. Please join me next week. Meantime, take a look at www.emergingfrontier.ca. Thank you.
Thanks for listening today to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with host Gavin Graham. Be sure to join us again next Wednesday at 6 a.m. Pacific Time, 9 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for another edition. Have a profitable week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.